This week on Art in the Air, we feature Grammy-nominated composer Catherine Duke, whose music blends Celtic and world melodies with contemporary electronica, rhythms, and atmospheric soundscapes. Next, we have Pam Wheelock, who creates artisan cat and dog toys using all natural materials. Our spotlight is on Chesterton Art Center's Fall Class Offerings with Jillian Bridgman.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM and WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming at WVLP.org, and every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available on our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our shows are available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for more information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight Jillian Bridgman, who's the program director for the Chesterton Art Center. And she's going to go over what they have coming up in the fall at all means, but for kids, adults, and all the way around. Jillian, welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Welcome, Jillian.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us about what's going on you have in the fall. You just got through, not too long ago, the art fair, and so now we can kind of concentrate on what's going on in the building and elsewhere, in other buildings. So tell us all about what's going on.
Right. I would also like when you get a chance, I would like an update on the Teen Arts Group as well, how it's going with the Upsy Daisy and all that news.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do have a full lineup of fall programs for both youth and adults. There's going to be some new classes as well as returning favorites on our calendar. So I'm going to do my best to kind of give you a summary of everything that's going to be filling our classrooms this fall. I'll kind of say this at the top, but you'll hear me say it again and again. For more information on all of these classes that I'm going to discuss, as well as for registration, you're going to want to visit chestertonart.org/classes. So kind of the first thing I want to talk about is our after-school art class program. This is going to be a returning program. It's very popular among the kids here at the center. So our after-school art classes are offered every month from September to May for ages 5 to 16. And then during each of these four class monthly sessions, students will be exploring an arts-related theme, topic, or movement through a wide variety of different 2D media. And something that we want to make note of is because each monthly session offers a different theme and set of projects, families are welcome to register for one session, a few, or the whole year. September sessions that are coming up for this school year are going to focus on the realist art movement to kick off the year. And students are going to be working in both painting and drawing for this session with a strong focus on animals as the subject. The session dates do vary by age and weekday. So ages 8 to 12 can choose between Mondays or Thursdays from 3:30 to 5. Ages 5 to 8 can choose between Tuesdays or Wednesdays from 3:30 to 5 as well. And ages 12 to 16 meet on Thursdays from 5:30 to 7. Tuition is $70 for CAC family members and $90 for non-members.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Jillian, what is the membership? What is the membership price?
Yeah, absolutely. So membership goes for the whole year. So if you wanted to be a family member, it's just $50 for the year. And what that constitutes is anyone that's living under the same roof is essentially allowed to use that membership toward tuition of classes. So in the case of kids, obviously, you would have the family or the adults of the house sign up for that membership. And then if they choose to take a class or any kids under that house take a class, they're able to apply that toward their tuition. So it's a pretty good deal. Kind of moving forward, on top of our after-school art classes, we also do additional classes that are offered to youth and teens throughout the year. And these classes are typically offered on Saturdays so that we have class kind of running throughout the week. And these are going to focus on a specific media. So in September, we're going to be featuring our popular teen ceramics class. This four-week class will meet from Saturday, September 17th through October 15th. There's no class held on October 8th at 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. and is targeted for ages 12 to 18. In this class, students will learn basic wheel throwing skills and decorating techniques as they create their very own finished ceramic pieces. And tuition for the teen ceramics class is $100 for CAC family members and $120 for non-members. And again, you can find both of those sets of classes up on our website at chestertonart.org/classes. Something a little bit new that we're trying, this one is more geared toward the little ones. We're going to be offering a preschool pop-in on the second Tuesday of each month at 10 to 11:30. And this class is going to be recommended for ages 3 to 5. Young artists in this class will focus on the development of fine motor skills through different creative arts learning experiences. And the fun part about this class is that we encourage parents or caregivers to stay and create together with their young artists. So it's kind of a fun little family class that's going to be offered every month. So the first one is going to be in September, on Tuesday, September 13th, from 10 to 11:30 a.m. During this class, the kids will specifically be doing a sweet little owl painting, and they're going to be focused on learning to hold a brush properly, as well as filling in different shapes. So this class tuition is per one class session. It's $30 for non-members and just $20 for current CAC family members. So that gives you kind of a good summary of a lot of the different kids classes, kids and teen classes that are going to be happening. And then something else with them is our teen arts group. So we talked about this earlier, and I'll give you kind of a little update with them. Upsidaisy went great. We kind of finished that out in June, and then we're able to bring the sculpture back here to the center. And then something exciting kind of on the horizon for TAG is that we're really hoping to expand our teen arts group this school year. It is a free monthly program for teens, typically ages 13 to 18, where CAC offers professional arts experiences ranging from art museum visits, exhibitions, artist talks, and workshops, as well as portfolio development. And this September, we're hosting an exciting artist talk with local artist Corey Hagelberg. Corey's work is currently on display here at CAC, so he's going to walk us through his exhibition. He'll discuss being a local NWI artist. He's going to do a printmaking demonstration with all of us, and then we're all going to have the opportunity to print together as a group. So TAG's a great way to meet people with similar creative interests and become a part of our local art community. So if you're interested, all you have to do is email me directly at programs@chestertonart.org.
Very good. And just in the last minute here, anything else you got going for adult classes real quick here?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously art isn't just for the kids here at the center. We have a full lineup of classes for the adults as well. This is including new and returning classes. Some of the popular ones that are returning are ceramics, stained glass, oil painting, and digital photography. There's also going to be some new classes in a variety of media like pastel, watercolor, mixed media collage, drawing, and writing. And on top of all of this, I just want to say that we do have scholarships available for all of our programs, both for kids and adults. We think it's very important to have a great accessibility to our programs, and that's kind of why we started this scholarship fund. So if you're interested in applying for a scholarship, you can visit chestertonart.org/scholarships and fill out an application.
And you can find out all the information at chestertonart.org. That's Jillian Bridgman, Program Director for the Chesterton Art Center. Lots of things happening. Jillian, thank you for coming on Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you,
absolutely.
Jillian.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
The music you are hearing is from our guest. We would like to welcome Catherine Duke to Art on the Air. Hailing from Melbourne, Australia, Catherine is a musician and a financial paraplanner. She is a multi-award-winning composer and producer of music. Catherine describes her sound as a blend of ambient, Celtic, electronica, and world music to take you on an ethereal journey. In 2005, her debut album, Visions and Dreams, was issued, and her next album, Voyager, was in 2015. Thank you, Catherine, for joining Larry and I on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, we enjoy having you. And your audience wants to find out about our guests, and so I'm going to ask you a little bit to tell a little bit about yourself. Tell your story, everything from where you're growing up, how you got music was influenced, everything. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us about yourself, Catherine.
Okay, I live in Australia, as you can probably tell, from Melbourne, which is the most locked down city in the world during COVID, but it's all good now. And I think I first got into music when I was probably in grade two. So we at school, we had a caravan that had about 8 keyboards. It came around every week and we would learn keyboard, and that was pretty fun. So eventually I went on to classical piano in high school, early high school. I was also in the choirs at high school, and in primary school I got invited to the Australian Girls Choir, but I didn't join because my parents thought it would take up too much time. And so after that I got into synthesizer. That was in my, I guess what you would call the senior year in the US, year 12. And that was really fascinating. Our synth teacher, he was really cool. He was on a entertainment show playing saxophone in a band, I guess similar to the one of your talk shows that you have, you know, in the background, like say Johnny Carson or something like that. He was in the band. And it was really cool because it was so different from classical music, and I started recreating songs, you know, like the pop songs. I could recreate it on the synthesizer for fun. And then I got into composing my own music. My first song that I remember was called Incan Melody, which had some Native American, I think South American influences. So at that time it was world music in the pop charts was really popular, you know, like Deep Forest and Enigma. So that was the style of music I started with, and it actually won first prize in the original song competition at school.
So in school, were you practicing with other musicians or did you compose on your own?
I just composed on my own. We did have, I think there was another student in my class, but it was very informal. And I really enjoyed it because it was just so freeing to play that compared to classical music where you do scales and, you know, sit.
What was it like composing that first piece? How did you, so was it just some, you got an idea for, or you were on the keyboard and you came up with a phrase you liked, and then where do you take it from there? Like your very first piece.
Yeah, I think I was really inspired by the pan flute sound, which was really huge in the, I think it was the early 90s. And so that synthesizer I was using, it only had 128 sounds, you know, those general MIDI ones that are all like built into the synthesizer back in the day. But it's very interesting. Like when you're only limited to those sounds, you have to really work on your composing and arranging to get the most out of it. So, yeah, it had just... you know, some world percussion. And then I actually got one of my friends to sing on it. It was sort of like, I guess you could say, an upbeat song from maybe Pocahontas, like that kind of, yeah. But anyway, so it was the first adventure into composing music.
Do you have any heroes that were in your early career, like that you looked to for being a composer, especially with the genre that you've eventually become part of?
Yeah, so Deep Forest, Eric Mouquet, he's from France. He's one of the two main composers, the members of the group. And I actually am in contact with him now. Same with Bill Whelan from, you know, the composer of Riverdance, and I'm also in contact with him. Then my favourite pop band back in high school was The Corrs, and I eventually did an official remix for them, and I'm in contact with Jim Corr. So it's just really amazing that I've met all, you know, a lot of my idols. Oh, and, you know, Moya Brennan, Enya's sister, I met her personally as well. So it's really cool. I never thought this could happen.
Right, and these collaborations as well. It's very wonderful.
They're not really collaborations, just meeting them,
When you remix, though, are you collaborating, or is that independent of the band? Like when you remixed for The Corrs, were you in contact?
Yes, I was actually in contact with Jim Corr. I haven't been in contact with the sisters, so we actually set it up, Jim and I, because the goal was to get it into the Grammy remix category. So no nominations, but it was very good fun.
And you had something that was nominated in the New Age category. What was that, 2017, I believe, or something?
Oh, very good, Esther. Yeah, that was Voyager. So that's in the World Beat category, I guess, called New Age World Beat. A bit of electronica mixed in. Quite a lot of Celtic Irish influences. I really love Irish music. I got into it at high school, and when I went to Ireland, I actually bought a Irish low whistle. brought it back. Oh, it just fit in my suitcase, and then they lost my luggage on the way back.
Oh no!
It was retrieved, so that was really cool. It was at a very famous music shop in Dublin, where the Corrs used to buy their instruments when they were starting. Yeah.
So do you like the Chieftains, if you like Irish music? Yes.
I love it. I love all types of Irish music, from, you know, traditional to, you know, the New Age mix, like, say, Secret Garden 2002, where they combine it with more New Age styles and the modern ones. Yeah. Sounds.
What is your process like? Does it come upon you unexpectedly? Do you make time to sit down and say, I'm going to compose, and or I don't know. So what does inspire you?
I think what's inspiring me, like, to sort of fill up the creative well, is watching movies, like in the theaters, which only recently happened because 2 years, you know, we were locked down. So the first movie I saw recently after the lockdown was Top Gun, and that was really awesome. So I'm getting very inspired. I've got my next one is actually probably inspired by the original soundtrack, but using some modern influences. And so I really like that. I love going to see artwork, walks in nature, especially by the ocean. And, yeah, I make time. It's usually I have sessions, so I try to do it most days of the week. It's usually only either in the evening on weekdays, because I work. I have a day job in finance, and in the mornings on weekends. So I'll set maybe half an hour on weekdays, 1 hour on the weekends. And when I'm working on a song, I'll just keep on progressing on that. But usually the inspiration happens when I'm just, you know, mucking around. So I'm just like trying out different sounds on with my software, and something, I'll get a phrase and I'll quickly have to record that.
Catherine, we want to listen to some of your music, and boy, I've been listening to a whole wide variety, but the one I think you released is a single called Blind You. Tell us a little bit about that and we'll listen to it.
So that was a collaboration with Ben Hobbs. He's a English singer-songwriter, sort of like he describes himself, I think, or maybe I describe his music as Coldplay, a bit more poppy, and so maybe Justin Timberlake meets Coldplay meets Sting. So that one was one of his most poppiest songs, and I think the goal was to also get it in the Grammy remix category, which didn't work, but that was also good fun to do. So that was like a EDM pop style, so very current style. The original one was more 80s. It actually sounds like it could have been from the 80s. So I kept the original feel, but just changed up the chords. And so it's more like the EDM you hear in the charts now.
Well, let's take a listen to it. Here's Blind to You from Catherine Duke. Catherine Duke's Blind to You, and you released that as a single, correct?
Oh, yes, that's right. Digital single.
It's a digital single. So now talk about the process now. You know, there are CDs out there, but you find the digital release process that works much better in getting your music out there?
Oh, yes, definitely. It's very fast. I can get it out, I think, within 2 weeks. And with the CDs, it was very interesting because I used to go through CD Baby or The Orchard, and I had to post the CDs to the US. And as you know, it's like now it's become incredibly expensive. And then they, if it, someone bought CD in Australia would have to be posted by the distributor back to Australia. So I don't make any physical CDs anymore. I think that vinyl is very interesting, especially for the pop genre. I know a lot of major label artists and indie artists even, they're releasing it on vinyl. So I think it's like a collector's edition, but no, I don't do hard copies anymore.
Do you do the art for like Voyager? So beautiful. Did you?
No, that's actually done by a Finnish graphic designer, Jani Jani Auckland, I think his name is, and he's very talented. He does a lot of heavy metal covers, actually, but I saw his artwork. I think it was on one of those artwork sites, and I wanted to get hold of him because his artwork was amazing, and I think that's also what helped it to get a nomination, I think, because to sort of attract attention to the artwork and make it stand out, and it really suited the mood. So I had specifications that I wanted, and I took some of the photos that he used. He just made it look like, you know, the old style. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really lovely.
You know, we're almost ready, about 2 minutes away, but we want to have a chance to tell us about your new number one hit on the EDM chart that did that with Jonas Eikensson. Tell us about that. It's a Remember When, and we'll listen to that as we play out here.
Yeah, so I got into synthwave. I think it was like during the lockdown I started listening to 80s music because it's very nostalgic, and it's sort of like you can sort of forget that it's not 2020 back then. I think it had a huge resurgence back in 2020, 80s music. And then I just built on it. I started listening to synthwave bands, which are current, like The Midnight. So they use 80s influences. And in fact, their music does sound like it could have been in the 80s. And I was really influenced by that and started getting into synthwave. So from new age to synthwave, it's quite a big change, but I think I'll stay with synthwave for a while. And so that was the first synthwave song I did, and I needed a real guitarist on it, and I just contacted Jonas because he played in the band for Roxette, Swedish band, and he had the right sound because he was doing music in the 80s. And, yeah, it's really authentic. And he's an amazing guitarist.
Catherine, where can we find your music online and your website? Tell us, our audience.
Yep. So I'm on Spotify, Apple Music, all those sites. And my official website is Catherine, that's a C, and Duke, so DUC.com.
And, of course, we will have a link on our website. When you click on her photo, it will take you right to there. That's Catherine Duke, and we're going to be listening to Remember When, her new hit number one on EDM charts. Thank you so much for coming on Art of the Air and sharing your wonderful music.
Yeah, thank you for spending time with us.
Thanks, Larry and Esther. It's really great to be here and chatting with you.
to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Pam Wheelock to Art on the Air. Pam is the founder and inspired toy designer at Perfect Play, a company that creates cat and dog toys employing pleasing designs using organic and natural fibers, all ethically sourced. Pam and Perfect Play states, if Mother Nature didn't make it, we don't use it. Thank you, Pam, for joining Larry and I on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. It's so good to see you.
Thank you, Esther.
Well, Pam, our audience always wants to know a little bit about your background and everything like that. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us your personal journey story.
Actually, it's a pretty long story. So I had cats all my childhood, and they were my favorite companions. And I actually lived in Ann Arbor for the first 30 years of my life. And in my 20s, I was a poor student, and I took a long course on design for women in my position to start their own businesses. And the business I chose to focus on was a cat toy company. But back then, which would have been over 30 years ago, there was no real internet, there was no e-commerce. And in order to start a company, and I think a lot of people, perhaps of the younger generation, don't appreciate this, it took a lot of money and a lot of support to start a company, because there wasn't this venue like Etsy and e-commerce to start small. So I designed that idea, and then I set it aside, and I went on to finish my bachelor's degree in general science and biology at Eastern Michigan University. And I have what I like to say is a bachelor's in fiber arts, although I was short one course, and it was a drawing course, and I never finished that course. So I graduated with the equivalent of three degrees. And then I went on and moved to New York for a while, and I came back and I finished a master's degree in occupational therapy. I went on to work for a while in the healthcare field. I always was during this whole process making my own cats and my friends' animals' toys as a kind of a hobby. And then I just got really burned out in healthcare, and I really wanted to go back to my original loves, which were cats. Originally, Perfect Play was a cat toy only company. And so I started designing toys. I did a few shows. I tried to get a feel for what was out there. And I did a lot of educating myself on materials. So the keystone issue for Perfect Play was that what I would do is I would go and I would visit, at that time, mostly big box stores were selling cat and dog toys. And from a biologist's point of view, because that's what I had my bachelor's degree in and my master's, they were a nightmare. The toys were hot pink, green, made of plastic. They had all kinds of fuzzy, easily rip-offable appendages and eyes, and they were sparkly and crinkly. And I did a lot of research on the materials these toys were made out of. And of course, all these toys back then, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, were coming straight out of China. And there's no watchdog. There still is no watchdog agency to look at pet toys coming into this country. There is a nominal effort to judge pet food, very nominal, but there is zero, zilch, nothing to test dog toys and cat toys. So at the same time I was researching the materials, I was reading a lot from a biologist's point of view on the diseases and the other concerns that pet parents had, and the incidences of autoimmune disorders, hormonal issues like Cushing's disease, and cancer was just, and kidney disease was just skyrocketing. And so I, in my research, I decided that it was really clear that we should not allow our dogs and cats to chew on fibers that are full of plastic, full of hormone disruptors, full of dyes that have, we know from
studying many of the famous painters that they ended with heavy metal disease. Right. And a lot of brightly colored fabrics are bright because they're heavy metal bonded to the fabric.
And like so enamels and lead, you know,
it's just awful. It's really awful. And so what do you need to break that bond? Saliva, heat, and friction. What is inside a pet's mouth? Saliva, heat, and friction. So it is, and the irony of it all is that cats and dogs, cats especially, see contrast. They don't see color. And dogs don't see color all that well either. So really what you're doing is you're appealing. And the other thing is these toys stink. If you go into the aisle of a big box store, no names be mentioned, you can smell the toy aisle from a distance. And so I just don't think it's just not a good idea. So when we went out looking 15 years ago for fibers, we decided to be 100% dye-free and 100% organic when possible. Hemp is not certified organic. It just isn't. It's not available, but it's all grown naturally. It's very well documented. And so we use hemp and organic cottons, and we don't use anything that's dyed. Well, there's only one toy we use that's dyed, and that's in the washing machine for hours. So, but there is a woman who had hybridized color-grown cotton. It's a wild cotton cross, and it is colored cotton. And this is actually where cotton was in the 1800s. In the early 1800s, it was all colored. And so what we have access to are browns and golds and green colored cotton that is actually raised that way, and it has no dye in it whatsoever. So anyway, the upshot is that I decided to use a very pure material, and then I decided to use my intuition and my sense of aesthetics to design the toys. And so I use my intuition after being with my cats and dogs for hours and hours and hours and hours and lifetimes of watching them play to see what it is they like. And that's been sort of the hard sell. We don't sell pizza slice toys. We don't sell taco toys. We don't sell bright pink balls. We are appealing to the pets. Well, the pets aren't at the store with their wallets, right? Their moms and dads are. So it's a matter of educating and also taking a lot of joy in the designs we come up with and how much cats and dogs love our toys.
Pets have been exhibiting allergy symptoms as well lately.
Yes.
So a lot of people are aware that they have dietary yes. needs just like we do. So.
Right.
I want to dial back just a little bit you. As a child, you were interested in crafts, and I was interested by your grandma and how they influenced on that. So explain that a little bit, and then we'll continue on with the development of your business.
My grandmother was a mother of 12, and she lived in Kentucky, and she's a farmer. And in order to make what they called pin money back then, she crocheted these elaborate Irish rose quilts with crochet thread. And I would go and spend the summers with her. And when I was 6 years old, I asked her if she would show me how to make a rose. And she told me she didn't think I could do it. I was too young. And I said, yeah, I think I could try. And so I was been crocheting since I was 5 years old. And so I have this long sense of heritage in using my hands and a great love of using my hands. My hands are the smartest part of my body. And I would say that they're smarter than my brain in many ways.
So continue on with your story. You build these toys, and you obviously have a love for pets, like cats and dogs. And well, tell us maybe about your little pet family, first of all.
Well, so when I was growing up, I didn't have what I would call the happiest childhood in the world. So I depended on my cats for solace, and they really pulled me through some very dark days. And so I have always lived with cats, and I've always oriented my life around cats. So we had at one time 7 cats, and they all lived really long lives until they were 18, 19, or 20, and they died. And that's life. But we ended up, our first dog, we got off the beaches of Mexico in Zihuatanejo, and
They really do become part of your life. It's always tough. I know when I see my friends on Facebook and they've lost their close pet, it's really, they become part of your family. They really are.
But dogs are really different from cats. So I've really, we started out as a cat toy company. And then after we adopted a dog, we started making dog toys. But they're a completely different genre, completely different. Dogs and cats play completely differently with each other, with their toys and with each other. And so that's been an educational hill. Dogs are really hard on their toys.
They are.
Hard on their toys.
Can you explain some of the differences between them, like when you approach that? But just
well, let me just say what I often say is cats can destroy their toys in one of three ways. They can claw them, they can chew them, they can drag them around and drop them in their water dish.
Yeah, they can hide them.
They can hide them, and you might never find them again. Dogs tear their toys up completely differently. Some dogs will chew and chew and chew until the toy is destroyed. Some dogs will gut their toy almost immediately. Some dogs will carry certain toys around for hours and hours and hours and never damage it. Some dogs will play with your toy and never destroy it. And the interesting thing is dogs that do destroy their toys, like I said before, you cannot guess how they might destroy it, because dogs have been bred to be completely different in behavior than cats. Cats are just cats, mostly. I mean, Siamese cats talk a little more. Abyssinian cats are really athletic. But dogs, you have a pit bull and you have a chihuahua, and they're bred to be completely different in personality, the way their paws work, the way their mouth works, everything is different. So designing dog toys is infinitely more difficult than designing cat toys because of those variations. Because when someone thinks of a dog toy, they think, well, what size is your dog? Oh, it's a medium-sized dog. Well, but that's not all of it. So we work very hard to give very specific information on our website and on our Etsy pages about how our dog toys work.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
And your dog toys are so thoughtful. So maybe you could your multi-layered toys are really genius. So if you want to expand on your toys and the materials you chose, especially for those chewers.
And that's really thoughtful. I appreciate that input. So years ago, when we first started making dog toys, we thought, well, two layers, right? Two layers. Well, what happens is the dogs will chew the top layer off the bottom layer. They'll just rip it right off. And so that didn't work. So the first really successful dog toy we came up with was, it looks like a pierogi. I call it a fortune flyer because it does fly through the air when you throw it, but it's inside is two layers sewn together, two layers of hemp canvas sewn together. The top layer is a little bit bigger. It is also two layers, but it's created like it's sort of a pillow that goes around the two-layer inner toy. And what that does is, what happens with dogs is they get, their teeth get, hold the fiber in place. And their paws hold the toy down and they pull on it. So in order to, with their teeth, so in order to make the toy more durable, you have to have give on the outside and you have to have sturdiness on the inside. Sturdiness and give on the outside. You can't make it just sturdy because it'll be hard and firm and the dog can get their teeth in it, pull it and rip it right off. And boy, oh boy, has that been challenging. So, there are still dogs who destroy our toys, but
it takes them a little longer.
It takes them a little longer. And some of the dog toys seem to last a really long time. So it all depends on the dog toy. But the other difficulty is the fiber we work with dog toys. It's very thick hemp canvas. It's heavy. It's dense. And you can't just sew six layers together. You can't. It just, you can't do it. I don't even, an industrial machine won't do it. So we had to compartmentalize the sturdiness issue, but also make it an enjoyable toy for the dog. Can't just be, if you just make a super durable toy, dogs won't like it. It won't respond. It'll
challenge them.
It'll be dead, right? You know what I mean? It'll be dead on the ground. It's sturdy, it's thick. And so who cares? I don't want to play with it. So that's the happy medium. And sometimes we succeed. And every once in a while, there's a dog who works that toy way too aggressively, way too fast. And we warn people that that might happen. Oh, and the other thing we do is our stuffing is never polyfill. It is always cotton. People worry about their dogs swallowing fibers. Natural fibers are not nearly the problem that plastics are. Plastics don't digest. They're not natural. Our digestive enzymes don't break them down. They just stick in your gut like an impediment to digestion. It's just stuck there. Those Kongs are, there are certain sturdy toys that, yes, they might be quite durable, but they're also durable when your dog chews a chunk of it and swallows it. So I think a lot of vets have experienced that in their surgery departments. But we do use squeakers because squeakers are plastic, and there's no way to get a squeaker that isn't plastic because it needs to squeak, it needs to be malleable enough to the dog to clench its teeth on it, and it expresses the air, so it gives, and then it squeaks. We put those squeakers in a separate hemp packet so that not only are there the four, in the case of the flyer, four outer layers, but if the dog were to rip open that toy and get to the squeaker, it's not a slippery little plastic thing. It's in its own compartment.
Wow. Hey, I was going to ask you about for cats. Do you add catnip to any of your toys for them?
Yes. We have about half of our toy line is catnip, and the other half is catnip free. So I classify our toys as being three different schools of toys. In the cat toy world, there's catnip toys. There's catnip-free toys, and there's wool toys, which are also catnip-free, but they're complete. Our most popular toy for cats, bar none, is a very simple concept, very simple technology, but complicated process. And that's our felted pom-pom toys. We call them dust bunnies. Cats love them. I mean, we sell a lot of them. And all they are is a pom-pom of wool that's held together very tightly, put them in the washing machine for hours. They're felted, triple rinsed, and then they are dried in the machine, and then they're trimmed. It's a very long process, and what you come up with is a pom-pom that can't be pulled apart. It's bouncy, and cats think it's like a round mouse, and they carry it all over the house, and they talk to it, and they chirp to it, and it's a really popular toy. But with catnip, non-catnip toys, so with all of our pet toys, especially the cat toys, cats really respond to texture, and you can see it in the way they hunt. You know, they go after crispy dragonflies, furry, squishy mice, sticky, jumpy frogs. And these are all different textures. And so they're very textural. They're not nearly, and they like contrast. So our toys, especially the catnip-free toys, we put a lot of emphasis on texture and shape. And how does the toy move? We have a catnip-free toy that's a jingle snake that's segmented so that when it's played with, it flips around because of the segments. And it jingles. So sound is pretty important to cats as well. So it's just different. It's completely different. And what's really talking about this so odd for me, because when we first started, we had three toys. We had a small catnip mouse, a medium catnip mouse, and a wool ball. And that is it. That's it for 2 years. That's all we had. And then we started making, I started designing more toys. And it's just, it's almost like one new toy leads to another new toy.
Do you have any projects that you're looking forward to doing that you haven't actually done or experimenting with as a new item to put out?
Yes. So we have been asked by a lot of people to make bedding for cats because a lot of the bedding is synthetic based. And like, so big shout out to everybody. Do not give your pets Scotch guarded bedding. It is a very bad thing. It's Teflon. Teflon is that forever chemical everyone's been talking about. And it's associated with all kinds of disorders. And once you get that stuff in your house, molecularly, microscopically, you just cannot get rid of it. It's in your house pretty much forever. That's why it's called a forever chemical. The bond is made in a laboratory and is not a natural bond, so it can't be broken by nature. But anyway, so all cotton bedding. And we've been trying, we're also about to start selling beds, which is something we have not wanted to do because it's this huge volume thing, but there isn't much out there for people. And our customers, I've really been wanting that. The other toys we're working on are some new dog toys. Dog toys take so much experimentation and so much front loading contemplation of design with the materials that we work with, that it's a huge project to get a new toy up in production for dogs.
Do you have designs in mind for one?
Yes. So a segmented stick made with hemp that we may either make it jingly or squeaky, or they may get to choose which one they would like. The other thing I've been wanting to do for years, and I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to do this, I've really been wanting to make little natural collars for dogs and cats that are just decorative, but are really artistic and interesting and safe. So lots of times I see pets with these interesting collar ornamentation, and I think, gosh, what happens if the dog chews on that, or what happens if it gets caught on something, or anyway, but that's something I've been wanting to do for years, and really for myself, for the fun of it. Right.
Well, Pam, we just have a moment left. Yeah. Let's tell us your website and contact information and how they can find out about you.
Sure. So the website is Perfect Play. You can just query Perfect Play, PurrFectPlay. And our website will come up. Our Etsy site will come up.
Your Instagram,
and hopefully my blog will come up as soon as I find the time to do that. That's one of the challenges, right? Is to find time for things.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air and sharing the artistic side of making cat and dog toys. Pam Wheel-Like is going to be there. It's at perfectplay.com. And if you go to our website and click on her picture, it will link you right to it. Pam, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air.
Thank you.
It was so interesting.
Thank you. Take good care.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org, and every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. We would like to thank our current supporters and underwriters, which include regional art patron Mary Levan and Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art on the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, Give till it feels good, and you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.